It's a podcast, and if you are watching this on YouTube, or even if you're listening, do not be confused by the fact that there are two familiar faces with us once again. This is not a repeat, but it is important to understand that since Paul Jones and Butch Carter were with us last week, there have been extraordinary developments in the world of sports, and so John and I felt it was appropriate to bring the guys back and address what has happened, because it is absolutely the topic that is on the lips of everyone. It began with the National Basketball Association. It may even have begun with the Toronto Raptors in a conversation that they engaged in, and then the Milwaukee Bucks decided to boycott a game. The NBA essentially has shut down the last couple of days. Major League Baseball's had several games that have been postponed. And now the National Hockey League has stepped in and postponed their playoffs for several days. Butch, to you first. Is there reason to believe that these actions in and of themselves taken by these leagues can have significant impact, in your opinion?
Only if they have really intelligent leadership. Because if you go all the way back to the civil rights movement, the movement was always stifled by the majority controlling the first responders, which are your police forces. And we've only seen evidence of that's true in 2020 by the brilliance of Apple putting a camera in a phone. So we're getting third-party validation that was never available. So what you have is that they're building huge awareness, Bob. The issue is that are they going to get a tangible return on the awareness? I believe that the awareness bucket is full. I believe that the point they're missing, let's go back to getting rid of Donald Sterling, all right? That was a tangible win, all right? But right now the bucket is full. The NHL is deciding not to play because they were embarrassed into it. The reason is that how do I get something tangible that is really, truly life-saving? And it goes to when the first responders are aligned with the majority that's in charge and responsible for social injustice, then it's really impossible. If you go back 200 years and you look at the records of lynchings, 80% of the lynchings, they were taken out of the jail. They didn't catch them on the side of the road. They were in for something else. And in the middle of the night, all right, the first responders cooperated and collaborated, all right? And that's how the Pale Face Riders, the Ku Klux Klan, that was their power. And so right now, no one's come up with, you know, how do we get a tangible result from the first responders acting humanly responsible? And, you know, that's why, you know, I thank you for allowing us to do this show, because the message for me is that, look, Black Lives Matter. They can say all lives matter, but all lives don't matter if you discount a person's value because they're an immigrant or they speak different than you or they look different than you. So, you know, in my mind, it's no different than when I have to coach against a really good coach. All right. He's got a game plan. I've got to counter his game plan. All right. And awareness is not a counter. All right. It's like a woman having a designer dress. All right. But they ain't figured out that the designer dress don't look good on them. All right. So, you know, this show was important for me because you have a voice. All right. And you've always been open to things that are sensible. And what's sensible now is that how do you get a tangible result?
Well,
like that's, it's irresponsible.
Yeah. That's literally where I'm at here, Coach, is trying to figure out whether I don't know anybody that would suggest that what is being done is the wrong thing. The question becomes, is it the right thing? Is it something that will move the needle? Paul, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I agree with Butch. The awareness bucket is full. And what the NBA players did by boycotting, especially Milwaukee, was they just threw another rock through the window, because the movement had started to wane. Here you are, had George Floyd, and now a few months later, you have Jacob Blake. It's the same thing. So to Butch's point, you've got to change attitudes. And then I believe you got to go right to the top and change. If it's not going to go from the bottom up, it's got to come from the top down. Change policies, procedures. When somebody fires their gun, then and somebody's killed, I don't care who, if you're a policeman or whatever, like maybe it should be an immediate arrest and we deal with it after. That'll get people to think. It'll change attitudes, because I totally agree with Butch. The awareness bucket is full. Everybody knows. Look at us, four sensible people having a conversation about what can we do. We know what's out there, but it's a matter of changing things so you have, you know, John, I'll throw it to you, so you have some results going forward.
But this to me, and maybe this is simplistic, but this in my mind is more a white issue than it is a black issue.
Agreed.
I mean that, and we have to, we as a society have to agree. Now, I think the four of us do, or at least the two of us do, that are on here that don't have this, haven't faced the issues that you and Butch have faced. But we as a society have to admit there is a problem before we can fix it. And the problem is, in my opinion, and it is just my opinion, is that not all of us think there's a problem. And that's the part where Butch talks about the first line people, the police force. We have to admit there's a problem before we can fix it. And maybe we're getting closer to that resolution. And I hope that what we've gone through this week helps us get there. But I'm still not sure that it gets us through to that point.
Racism is not something you wear on your sleeve. It is not something that somebody can see from across
the world. I tell you what, you can see it on social media, Bob. You can see it on social media.
Oh, you ain't kidding, pal. I mean, I posted something yesterday, just a generic thing on Twitter, and the response is shocking. From a variety of perspectives, from both people who clearly do not understand what we are talking about and what the problems exist are, and those who are concerned only about watching a game and don't care about the situation at hand. The dilemma I see here, and I'm completely lost. Butch, I'm going to throw it back to you. Those of us who understand, who are appreciative and receptive to the cause, and who seek to assist in whatever way we can in correcting the injustices that exist, we are not the problem. We are not the solution either. I'm trying to figure out who is the solution. Lately, the last thing that's come up of significance is fingers being pointed at the owners of professional sports franchises, as if they can influence decisions. Butch, where do we go? This is the question I do not have the answer for.
Okay, so the let's draw a line at the 49th parallel. Canada has a different problem than the United States.
Sure we do.
Right? Yeah. Canada never had slavery, right? But Canada has had systemic racism.
In fairness, we do have issues, and we have not been as respectful enough and created equality with our indigenous people. We have not.
Okay.
We do have our problems.
Right. I'm not saying you don't have your problems, but I'd much rather get pulled over by a Canadian police officer than a United States police officer.
Sure.
Right? So here, Bob, here's a tangible result that has to get done. Canadians are giving when there is a tragedy. The biggest tragedy we have right now is that our local police force does not have body cameras. And they came out and said, well, we can't put the body cameras over. It's going to take 5 years. All right. So why can't we have the Toronto Foundation start a fund for people to donate money to put body cameras on so that we don't have to rely on third party. Mm-hmm. All right. The body camera has basically saved Masai's reputation. All right. Everyone assumed that there was a character issue with Masai because he had a conflict, and the police officer is verbal. All right. Even though it was black on black, was wrong. All right. And the release of the body cam gave a visual of actually what happened. The visual that we're getting from these iPhones with cameras are telling us what actually has happened. All right. The immunity part has to be shattered for first responders, which are police officers. All right. And we understand it's human nature. Being a police officer is not church. It's not going to the barber and getting a haircut. It is at times a very emotional and brutal business. But the reality of, for so long, as I've told you, this just didn't start with police officers. This has been going on in the United States for 200 years. All right. The same issue on the video that we saw of the conflict out west with the indigenous chief, where he was basically attacked. And the first responders lied about it the whole way, not knowing that it was being videoed. So what we need to do is find a way to fund those cameras and force the police into a scenario where they cannot hide behind a shield of loyalty, all right, of blind loyalty. And that, for me, is the tangible part that can be done right now, because the laws have changed. They said, okay, slaves can have the right to vote. Well, how can you have vote when you got guys wearing sheets out in front of your house telling you who to vote for? All right. They didn't get the legal right to vote in the Civil Rights Bill of 65.
Right.
And to this day, what the owners can do, the U.S. owners can open up their buildings for voter registration and for voting so that people don't have to stand. Why do you have to stand 6, 7, 8 hours outside to vote when in normal times you can go to the driver's license, get a driver's license with a lethal weapon to drive in an hour?
Yeah. That's all great points.
I think I do believe Atlanta's done that already and is going to do that. And I do think we're going to see that across the United States when it comes to the election, Butch. I think that that's the one thing that this movement might have created for all of these owners and for all the arena owners.
Go ahead, Butch.
The issue is that you can get a driver's license, you can get a social security card in the United States, right? But they send you through all these hoops because it is one of the ways historically Republicans have kept themselves in power. That and redistricting. In other words, okay, we've got too many Democrats in this area. Let's just draw a new map so that we're better representative.
Yeah.
And so that balance of power. But the issue is, as long as the first responders have immunity, can go in and lie and cover for each other, it's not going to work.
Well, the problem, too, is they've created a culture of it, Butch. I mean, Bob and John, the bad cops, because they're not all bad, but the bad ones are being protected by the culture that they've created that, as Butch says, of loyalty. I'm not going to speak against, when in fact, if they would come out and say to that guy riding in the car, or that woman riding in the car beside them, no, that's wrong. You can't do that. What are you doing? You're making us all look bad. And I think that culture has to be broken too, that, you know, that code has to be somehow dismantled.
That's an interesting one, because I recall after the George Floyd killing, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had was on one of the networks and said, you know, like, not all cops are bad.
Exactly.
But the 2% that are bad make the 98% complicit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's correct. But here's the issue, guys. All right. You're not going to change the code. All right. Put the cameras on them. The cameras change the code. You need third-party validation, right? Let me give you an example, all right? This is an example that I live, all right? I was made aware by Tracy McGrady and Alvis Smith, his AAU coach, They had just visited, had a visit from Larry Tannenbaum and Glenn Grunwald. And they told them that I was not going to be back. All right. So when I got the call, I think it was June 10th, that Glenn wanted to see me and they were going to go a different direction. I already knew it was coming. All right. No problem. All right. I had just won custody of my two oldest sons. And as soon as the season was over, I flew to be with them in Cincinnati, Ohio. So I had to come back to Toronto to do the press conference, which I said at the press conference, you know, I'm not leaving Toronto, right? I leave, I have an exit meeting with Petty. He tries to renegotiate my contract. I told him, no, call Ralph Lean. You know, just we'll tell you where to send the money to, right? I leave 3 days later, Richard Petty, all right, disparages me by saying I went after Glenn Grunwald's job, right? Not one reporter asked them, how did Butch go after Glenn's job, all right? Basically, what they did was said, okay, Butch is out of here, and Vince is going to be a free agent in 2 years. We're going to make it impossible for a team to hire him. Because they publicly said that a black guy went after a white executive's job, and it was an absolute lie. And you think you can change the culture of lying, all right? You're not going to be able to change the culture of lying unless you get third-party validation. And the Toronto press broke the golden rule by not asking the follow-up question, how did he do it? It was never asked, all right? And so they put me in that position, all right? And I was man enough to say, I will live through this. But this is what we have to deal with. That mandate came down from Larry Tannenbaum. And for Larry Tannenbaum to be in a video saying Black Lives Matter, all right, is absolutely false as far as it's concerned with how I was terminated. MLSC fully had the right to terminate me, all right? But they terminated me, all right, with special conditions. And those special conditions were to keep me from doing what I was very good at doing. All right. So if you think you can change a culture of lying, all right, it's impossible. The only way that this culture has changed in 2020, and you can go on YouTube and see lots of black guys running and getting shot, and the police report saying was that he was being attacked. All right. The two cases that we're talking about, George Floyd and Kenosha, all right, there's four or five more. Brianna's in her bed and gets shot, all right? No one's been arrested. There hasn't been a grand jury indictment, all right? This systemic privilege of lying and covering, all right, is north and south of the border. All right, so you're going to tell me that the executive, all right, that is allowed, and even 12 years later, I have a buddy named Joe. Joe sends me a newspaper in Florida. Says, what in the hell are they still talking about you 12 years after you're gone? All right, I had to write a letter to MLSC and say, look, why is this happening? I live two blocks from this. I haven't said a word about the Raptors, and Richard Petty is doing a story saying, Butch went after Glenn's job, all right? I only had two meetings the whole time I worked with Richard Petty. One was on the basketball court, about he wanted me to do some conditioning tests with him. And the second one was my exit. So the whole thought of, you know, you're gonna change a culture. The only way to change the culture is get third party validation. That is what history has always shown.
Yeah.
All right. The disparity between people has to be validated by a third party.
Guys, we planned on this being a shorter session, and I, you know, again, that's an impossibility, of course, with the four of us. Very quickly, before we go, what's next? And when I say next, and Paul, I'll throw it to you first, and then to Butch. In the next week, are we back to where we were 3 or 4 days ago? And will any of this matter?
Well, I think the players, at least in the NBA, will be pushing the owners to try to use their influence with politicians. I think they'll be pushing the voting aspect of it to make change on November 3rd and you know, change policies and practices. And I know Butch said that it's hard to change those attitudes. It is. But if you have policies, laws in place that people are held to, that starts to change. In my eyes, reluctantly, it probably starts to change the attitudes. Like, we can't do this anymore, or you can't do that anymore. And I think if it's not going to go from the bottom up, it's got to come from the top down.
Coach?
How are you going to do that with Donald Trump president?
Vote him out. Vote him out. And to the owners that hold them responsible, to the candidates that they support, if those candidates aren't for equality and you know, change in terms of the racial perspective, then the players have every right to say to them, well, wait a minute. Now, the problem is those guys still have the power with who they sign and who they pay, but you can start that conversation.
Okay, so I'm going to counter with it. It's hard for the owners because they have antitrust, right? And they're not going to do anything to lose their antitrust exemption. It's the same issue the NCAA is dealing with, all right? So that's what I'm trying to tell you, that the way the system is set up, someone's got to leverage on someone else that you don't think about. It's not, take the emotion out of it. How do the mechanics work, all right? That's how I won basketball games. So I'm not emotional about it. How do the mechanics work, all right? For people of culture, they've not been or had the power to understand how the mechanics work all the time. And you counterpunch the mechanics. You're so far ahead of the mechanics that when they figure it out, they say, well, we just leave them alone, right? The problem is this is not an emotional issue in leadership. This is a mechanical issue of how do we do something that stops what we're seeing. And the first line is third parties buying the body cameras and the municipalities saying, well, during the COVID, we can't afford it. You know, I've said enough on that, but, you know, I'm not emotional about this. You know, my family originated from Marshall, Tennessee. My great-grandfather was born into Mr. Huggins as a slave, released at 16 years old. He moved his family to a little place called Troy, Ohio. We were fortunate enough in Troy, Ohio to be able to get an education and be able to speak the King's English, which allows me to be who I am today. But at the end of the day, I'm no safer driving home in Ohio, all right, than I am any one of those NBA players, all right? I've got four sons, all right, and this is a consistent concern with them because one traffic accident at the wrong time at the wrong hour can lead to something that's tragic. And you know, yes, I feel strongly about it, but I also feel that this show allows all of us to say, you know, Bob's saying, look, I don't know how to do a solution. Let's get back to doing sports. I want to get back to doing sports. But the reality that we're dealing with, because Apple and Samsung put these cameras in the phones, is that we're seeing in flesh and blood what we've said has been going on for 200 years. And that's just the ones with color.
Yeah.
All right. I don't understand the prejudice. I don't understand why Chinese don't like Japanese, Protestants don't like Catholics. I really don't understand it when you're just trying to be a good human being and get an education.
No.
But I
hate to tell you, but we wind up in the same place we always do, and that is we go on and on and on and on and on, and there's no end to this conversation. Merely for the purpose of clarity, I'm not interested in whether the games continue or don't continue. I'm interested in finding a solution to this problem, and I think we are all searching for the way to do this. And probably the unfortunate part about this is that we are all conditioned to want instant gratification in the society in which we live. We want some to be able to snap our fingers and say, ah, there's the answer. Let's do that. And the problem with this is it will take years and decades and longer than any of us are on this planet probably to get to the point we all want our society to be at. John,
just quickly, is the key thing about the games being played or not being played and the athletes speaking out, that is a platform that the athletes need to use.
Absolutely.
That's the important thing. To me, the watershed moment this week was the post-game press conference of Doc Rivers, who talked about how he loved his country, but his country didn't love him. And to me, if the athletes don't use their platform, they are making a terrible mistake, and they have to play the games to use the platform.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you again soon. Butch Carter.
Thank you.
And Paul Thank Jones. You. Kevin Weeks joins us now to continue this discussion. Kevin's with the NHL Network now, a former player in the National Hockey League. We have seen hockey respond. Some think too late. Do you think the NHL reacted appropriately and in a timely manner?
I would say that it was a real unique opportunity. And with that opportunity and that drumbeat and that cadence of what was happening socially, specifically 2 days ago, that's one that I think we'd like to have back. And I felt like we were a little bit off in terms of our timing. Now, granted, we had the afternoon game. It was a triple header. We had the afternoon game to start. That's not absolving any, you know, responsibility or culpability on that. But I feel like the drumbeat was loud enough. It was powerful enough. We're talking about a human rights issue and something that's afflicted many of us directly, but even a lot of other people indirectly as well. And for that reason, and for the magnitude of that, I felt we were off beat and we were off on that drum beat. But what I will say, and that's unquestionable for me, but what I will say is the fact that they had the meetings, the players started gathering, and I can't tell you how proud I am of the players specifically. And I know that this wasn't done by the players outside of the NHL, but the players are the ones that drove this. I want to be very clear about that. I've spoken to so many of them, and I couldn't be prouder of them and any more thankful and grateful than them coming together. And especially, you know, the majority of the white players, forget us as black players, but the white players to have their support. I'm just floored by that still. I never thought I'd see a day where you get that much outward support. It just means so much to us. And quite frankly, it means so much to the sport.
Kevin, can you give us a sense of what yesterday was like? I mean, from the time you woke up, you could hear, you know, the movement. Mm-hmm. And can you explain how that happened and what it felt like to you?
I mean, I got goosebumps talking about it right now. Still, like when I woke up yesterday, you know, I started off at 9:30. I had a slate of different interviews. But as you know, and as dialed in as you guys are, the texts start coming in. And you can almost hear the wave coming. And I was in shock. Like, for as many players that were, hey, Weeksy, what do you think? Weeksy, this is happening. Some different staff that I talked to, Weeksy, it seems like something as big is coming down. I'm still in shock. Like, I never, ever anticipated something like that would happen. And the fact specifically, too, that makes it as powerful and empowering, I guess, as it is the fact that it was player-driven. Mm-hmm. And we always have, I think in every era, I said this last night on the NHL Network, too, I'm always grateful to the players that came before us and set the way. I'm grateful for the guys that I played with during my time as a player. And, you know, the players are the product, and I'm extremely impressed by these guys that are playing today, today's player. But the fact that, forget their skills and the speed and the creativity. Character's always been key for hockey. We all know that. But the fact that they've ratcheted that up to the level that they have around this, I'm absolutely blown away. What a day it was. I mean, it was such a roller coaster. But in seeing those players come together and band together the way they did for one another and for each other, and especially for us as black people and people of color, to have those guys support is off the charts.
That's really the interesting thing. Sorry, John.
That's okay.
Yeah. Is that, you know, we discussed this earlier, you know, mm-hmm. some very high percentage of the players in the NBA are black or African-American. I don't know whether mm-hmm. it's 80, 90, whatever it is.
Right.
NFL, similar kinds of numbers. Baseball, mm-hmm. the numbers have fallen off over the years. I think it's around 7 or 8%.
Right.
And the NHL is even lower than that. And mm-hmm. and this was a player initiative, perhaps started by black players, mm-hmm. at least in terms of dialogue, but immediately the white players respected the decision, endorsed mm-hmm. the decision, and went along with it. What does that mean to you and to other people of color?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. So, you know, there are a lot of guys that I played with and against, or, you know, that I grew up watching that I got to play against or with, and so many of them are great people. This would have never happened in 05. It would have never happened in 99. It would have never happened in 97, you know, when I first played my first few games in the league. And that's not an indictment of them. I think it just goes to show how far society's come, right, as people. Also, just the social atmosphere is very different. Social media is also a different atmosphere as well, vis-a-vis that social atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And the fact that these players – you know, we had Ryan Reeves on last night, and just listening to Ryan Reeves talk and listening to him, I mean, these are the last four teams in each respective conference. There's nothing in the world, no disrespect, we've got friends in every league, but there's nothing in the world like the Stanley Cup playoffs. There's nothing as physical. There isn't anything as competitive. There isn't anything as skilled, and that whole combination of tenacity and determination. And imagine this, fellas. There were four respective teams in their conferences to band together while battling for the Stanley Cup, while being in a bubble environment. That, to me, shows the depth of character and the depth of people that those guys are. Like Ryan Reeves, you know Revo. And Ryan Reeves is going back and he's jawing. And, you know, you see him on the ice. He's such an effective fourth-line player for Vegas. They've got a great fourth line. But imagine him going to bat and then going to battle, with these guys. Mm-hmm. And then these guys are saying, Revo, we're with you.
Yeah. Yeah,
imagine that.
Extraordinary, really.
Kevin, how do we ensure, and this is not me, this is not my personal opinion, how do we ensure that this isn't lip service? How do we move forward? We have games starting on Saturday again. How do we ensure that the movement continues?
Well, great question. And I would say this, the fact that there's now enough social exposure around it by way of social media. You know, people are savvier than they ever were, and they have the ability to consume media. You guys are, you know, two, you know, I always call you Godfather, but you guys are two of the media mavens that have been around for so long. And you guys, based on your experience and expertise, you've been at the forefront of the different platforms that have gone on for, Jesus, I don't know, 30, 40 years. But imagine now you tether that to all the technology that we have and all the bandwidth that we have. So people's eyes are open, as to are their ears. All that to say, people are going to be watching exactly what you asked me. So the way that you ensure that is, first of all, when you have that buy-in from the players, to me, anything is possible at this point. The players now will be pushing and looking and watching and listening to see what's enacted. And where that's concerned too, the players now have a bigger voice than they ever have. You know, it's not like in my day where you'd see the coach coming and walk the other hallway. You'd see the GM coming and I'd duck into the weight room. Like, literally, those days are gone from that standpoint. So the onus now, the players are going to push it, but the onus now is on a lot of our leaders, a lot of the executive leadership in respective teams at the club level and on the league level. And players are going to be very, very bullish on that to ensure that some of these changes take effect. It's not just going to be for lip service, that's for sure.
You know, the interesting thing about it is that you talked about the bubbles. Uh-huh. The fact that, you know, the four teams in each of those cities are in the same hotel.
Exactly.
And have actually probably had an easier time to communicate. Mm-hmm. Probably assisted in this being accelerated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No question. I mean, you know, those guys are within those two environments, respectively, out west in Edmonton.
Well, and to show the unity, holy, even last night in the press conferences.
100%. Imagine, like, just look at that picture. You have Bo Horvat on the right, played in the O for London, captain of Van, who's doing such an amazing job leading their team and playing as well as he is and producing at the rate he's producing at in terms of scoring goals and highlight goals. Then you have Jason Dickinson, a youngster from Oakville back home, playing in Dallas, who also played in the O, but playing in Dallas, who I thought was also very impressive at the podium as a young guy. Then you go to his immediate left, and you've got Ryan Reeves, a veteran guy who not only is a black player and a biracial player of color too, white mom. We all know his dad, Willard, played in the CFL back home for the Blue Bombers. Very respected player, tough player. Then you go to his right, if you will, and then you had Pierre-Edouard Belmar. I was blown away. Born in France, black player born in France, speaks three languages. He's trilingual. And then to his right, you have Nazem Kadri, whose parents are Lebanese, if I'm not mistaken, too. And he's, you know, he's out of London, Kitchener area, Kitchener-Waterloo. So just that kind of cross-section of players. And then flanked by everybody behind them. I mean, if that wasn't a show of solidarity, that I don't know what was. That's one of the most powerful images that I've seen in our sport. Like, we remember Patrick Waugh winking in the 93 postseason. You know, remember Gretz's game at the Garden against the Leafs in that elimination game in 93 and what was the Western Conference final. We remember the great Bobby Orr flying through the air on that goal. There's so many images that are etched in my mind, but that was right up there with those in terms of something that momentous and that historic for sure.
What has to happen next, in your opinion? I mean, you've alluded to the fact that the leagues, the teams, the management have to get on board. What do you hope they do, Kevin?
Well, when I started, like, at the league level, you know, we've all had a lot of conversations with Commissioner Bettman or Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, and they've always been big supporters. I've got great respect for them. I think they're going to really have to push this and really lean into the ownership groups, the respective ownership groups on this, and leverage their relationships. You know, you guys know that they have a lot of key relationships, not only with the top companies and corporate partners, but I'm talking about in Washington and Ottawa back home, right? With a lot of the key decision makers, a lot of key politicians, you know, whether they're provincial, whether it's at the federal level back home, whether as in terms of premiers here in the U.S., whether they're congresswomen, congressmen, senators, and of course other key political figures, push for reform in every market, literally across North America, not only where our member clubs are, where our teams are, push for reform around policing, around police brutality, around really civil rights and basic human rights. I mean, that has to come from them. We lean on them in other ways. We've leaned on them at different times. I know this for a fact because being not only on the air for the league in the face of their network, I'm also a league ambassador. So I've been to Washington with the league before numerous times. I've spoken on Capitol Hill. You know, I've done that whole thing with the congressmen and congresswomen and the lobbyists. The league now needs to leverage a lot of their influence for the right reasons in that respect and do the same thing at the club level in every market. And then going from there, hopefully that can bring about some changes and some reform. But then reinvest in, and I always talk about grassroots hockey, but let's start at the NHL level. Create all 31, soon to be 32 rinks, to be what they're designed to be, community spaces, and let those spaces be comfortable for anybody that walks in the door. You're French Canadian, we love you. You're Irish, we love you. You're Irish American, that's great. You're a Brit, that's awesome. You're Russian Canadian, that's great. You're Jewish, you're from the West Coast, you're from Nanaimo, BC, you're welcome here. You're Sikh or Hindu, you're welcome here. And create inclusive environments that way and atmospheres where people feel proud of who they are, what they are, and not feel like that's a drawback to them to be able to come to an arena as a player, as a fan, as an administrator, whatever the case may be, and as an employee in any capacity. Create a zero tolerance policy for anything but that and legislate that. So if it's a fan that says a racial epithet or something stupid, they're a knucklehead, you're gone. You're not allowed back here. I don't know. It's a year ban until you can come back and watch us. If it's a player, you get a 5 or 10 gamer. You know, if it's an employee, a GM, or anybody else for that matter, okay, you know, you'll be suspended without pay for a set amount of time. Create that at the NHL level. You guys know that cascades down to the American League and all the other feeder leagues. Sure. mandate that in junior, sure, across Canada, back home and in the U.S., college hockey. And especially you guys are on the ground back home. Guys, I can't tell you the amount of people that text me that say, man, you know, my grandma's Irish and people were making fun of her and her accent at the rink. And then they were calling me, you know, whatever they were calling me on the ice. And my parents are Indian or they're Polish or whatever the case may be. That's got to be stamped out at youth hockey all across Canada and North America. It's happening way too often. Fortunately, in my youth hockey, like minor hockey days, I never had that. I had that more in junior and then beyond. But we don't want to lose any more girls and boys and parents and grandparents and siblings that are trying to love the game if the game doesn't love them back for the wrong reasons.
You bring up an interesting point, and we haven't really addressed it. Mm-hmm. What was it like to be a black man playing hockey? What did you hear? What did you feel? And what did you see?
Yeah. Great questions. So when I first started playing, guys, I'm going to give you a little context, right? Hillcrest Park back home, because we used to live down around St. Clair and Christie, for any of our listeners in the GTA. And either Hillcrest Park and or Christie Pitts Park. Mm-hmm. I would go to those outdoor rinks with my older cousin, and I had Cougar winter boots, the old school Cougars with the red lining. And that's before I had skates. Literally, before I had skates. And my parents went down to the we went down to the Canadian Tire down at Yonge and Davenport, if I'm not mistaken, or in and around there.
Yeah,
that Canadian Tire is still there.
Yeah,
got my first pair of skates. They were Orbitz, and went up to St. Mike's Arena for Toronto Olympics House League and registered to play for $65. And my first teacher was Miss Mahar when I was in grade one back home, first grade, as they say here, at McMurrick Public School. My first book, I drew me in the net, an NHL scoreboard on the ice with the NHL logo. And from then, I was going to play in the NHL regardless. So growing up playing minor hockey back home, my family and I were always treated exceptionally well back home in the GTA area, always. And the odd time you go to a tournament, be it North Bay, maybe be it Sault Ste. Marie, you might have the odd knucklehead parent that might say something inappropriate. But for the most part, minor hockey, it was great. Once I climbed the ladder to, even in Tier 2 Junior B with St. Mike's, it was great. Once I climbed the ladder to the O, it was mostly awesome, but it started to show its face. And I'd start to hear comments from different players, the odd time, opposing players. I played with a lot of character guys on our team in Owen Sound and then in Ottawa my last year, so I was very fortunate that way. And I played for the great Byron Kilray. He was GMing that year in Ottawa. He didn't coach us, but so influential nonetheless. It was great to me. But then once I got to the minors in the American League, it wasn't as much of a thing. In the old IHL, it wasn't as much of a thing outwardly, like as far as opposing players. But I quickly knew that I was being evaluated differently. And from then I knew I was walking on a tightrope across Niagara Falls. That's what it felt like. So luckily for me, you know, I'm very fortunate in having, you know, great parents and parents that worked exceptionally hard and that are great people and a great sister and a good support system. But from that point on, you could see and you could feel and you knew that you're being held to a different standard, which is fine because I was raised that way. But in a professional environment, so to speak, it was real in terms of some people. Not everybody was the most open-minded. Not everybody was the most objective. Not every person of authority from a managerial or coaching staff was the most welcoming. Or it's almost like at times they're looking for something and always on the hunt for something to see if we could say, okay, well, here's a justification as to why we don't necessarily have to, I don't know, pay a market rate or give them ice time or whatever the case may be. So that made it really hard. And some of the media, unfortunately, was like that too in different places that I played.
Really?
Yeah, which was disappointing. But what that did was it made me know that in no way, shape, or form could I be complacent ever. Ever. Like, I couldn't be complacent. It wasn't a luxury that I wanted anyway. I wasn't wired like that, but I couldn't be complacent. And what it also did, guys, is people like Lou Lamoriello, like Glenn Sather, who I spent time we spent time with my girls from Alberta. She's from Calgary. So we spent some time with Mr. Sather. I played for him in New York, as you know, but spent some time at their place at Banff during Christmas. People like him, Lou Lamoriello, Jim Rutherford, Paul Maurice, so many others to mention, and different teammates and stuff. What it did is it made them of even higher value to me. And it made me appreciate them even more because they never saw that in me. They were great to me.
Change is difficult. Change takes time. And this one is going to take a long time. I think we all acknowledge that. But we have seen, I hope, some significant steps in the right direction over the last few days.
Totally.
We thank you. We thank you very much for being as blunt and honest as you have been with us. We appreciate it. And we wish you continued success. And hopefully we'll have a chance to chat down the road. Thanks, Kev.
Appreciate that. Guys, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank you guys for facilitating the conversation and having the platform. And also, you guys are all sports guys. You've always been really open-minded that way. And I think we have room for growth in that back home and everywhere, but especially back home in Canada. But you guys have been on the leading edge, you know, either on and or off camera or both at times in creating that too. So that goes a long way, man. I really appreciate that, honestly. Thank you both.
Thank you very much for your time. That'll do it.
Anytime, guys.
That'll do it for us. We'll see you next time on the podcast.